Hello, I'm Patricia Camilleri. Welcome to today's programme in this series entitled The Artifact. Over the next few weeks, I shall be speaking to some of Malta's key archaeologists about archaeology in general and about the many fascinating projects that are in progress or planned for the future. Today's guest is Ms. Sharon Sultana. Sharon graduated in archaeology at the University of Malta in 1995 and started work at the National Museum of Archaeology in July of that year. There she was involved in the delicate work of cleaning the artifacts, which are currently on display at the National Museum of Archaeology in Valletta, in the ground floor permanent exhibition. In 1998, she took a career break to have her family, but joined Heritage Malta, which is responsible for the National Museum of Archaeology, as it's, and started work there again in January 2004 as archaeology assistant and is now curator of archaeology. Welcome, Sharon.
Thank you.
Obviously, at the moment, your particular interest is the National Museum of Archaeology, NMA, as it's fondly known NMA. Amongst those who frequent it. And in fact, you've just authored a publication, I think, on by Heritage Malta about the museum.
Yes.
So no person better placed to tell us about it. Perhaps one could ask sort of some basic questions at the beginning about the NMA, where it is exactly, perhaps a little bit about its history, if you like.
Okay, well, basically, the National Museum of Archaeology is found in Republic Street, Valletta. Basically, when you'll be going into Republic Street, you'll be seeing, because we have some big banners just outside the facade, so that mm-hmm. people can't miss it. If they really want to come and visit, they have no excuse that they haven't seen the National Museum of Archaeology. It is housed in the Auberge de Provence, which is basically one of the few remaining auberges in Malta, dating to the period of the night. So that in itself is already something quite prestigious. We're very lucky to have the collection of the National Museum of Archaeology housed in there. And currently on display, we have the ground floor, which is open to the public, and in the ground floor, one can see the Neolithic period of Malta, which dates from 5200 BC up till 2500 BC. There are a large number of artifacts on display. The most spectacular ones and the most sought-after ones are obviously the Sleeping Lady and the Venus of Malta, and some of the larger figures from Hajar E and the Tarshin colossal statue. We also have a large hall dedicated to the Tarshin altars, which are basically the huge stone blocks which were brought in from Tarshin temples, mainly due to conservation purposes.
Mm-hmm. In fact, one could say that those are the originals, of course,
yes.
And Temiz Amit had copies made.
Yes, when you go to the Tarshin temples, you can still find copies of the stone blocks, and they were placed exactly from mm-hmm. where the original ones were taken. Till now, that is the scenario. In the near future, when we'll be having the Tarshin Visitor Center open, some of those stone blocks will go back into the Tarshin Visitor Center, and we will have to revamp the ground floor of the National Museum of Archaeology.
Mm-hmm. I think that museums is my particular area of interest, so I shouldn't really start talking about it because we'll end up talking for an hour instead of half an hour. Mm-hmm. But I think that the museum actually has been very successful in its new shape and form since it was reopened. I don't know, it must be some years ago now.
Yes.
Forget how many.
The display as it is now was opened in 1997. Mm-hmm. We are moving towards high-tech display, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. where we have showcases brought in from abroad, which basically control the climate within the showcase, so it's least damaging to the artifacts, because basically you have on display artifacts which have been below the ground for thousands of years, and then they're excavated, conserved, and then placed in a showcase with lights on them, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. And with the old display, we also had a problem that the artifacts weren't even conserved before put on display. So we had all biological growth, and showcases were made of wood, so that helped the biological mm-hmm. growth. And mm-hmm. so now at least we're moving towards
that direction.
Yes.
I always think that it's difficult in a museum that is really for general use to pitch the for example, the legends, to pitch the wording at the right level, because you've got people who are coming in who have got no idea about the museum, no idea what's in it, no idea about the Neolithic in Malta. You've got children coming in. You've got people who have quite a lot of knowledge. You have experts coming in as well. So pitching it is a bit difficult. I think on the whole, the National Museum of Archaeology has pitched it right. So how do you feel about that?
Yes, and up to recently even further, because basically 2 weeks ago we have placed in labels, individual labels, inside the showcases for artifacts. It had been quite long.
We've been waiting a long time for
yes,
that.
But we are quite understaffed and under-resourced, so like we're trying to manage a million things at one go. Sure. As you said before, the guidebook of the National Museum of Archaeology has just been published, and I kept it as simple as possible. So a person who comes in and has no idea of what prehistory means, there they have at least an explanation of what prehistory is, and it goes on to explain showcase by showcase what you can find in the showcase.
I think also one of the things I also like very much, I mean, I'm not talking high tech here, of course. I always like to take friends to the museum before going to the Neolithic sites, because you've got these wonderful models as well. And I don't know who actually did those models. Do you know who actually created them?
I don't
them?
Know who actually did those, but they are quite old.
Yes, they're quite old, yes. But they're very good, and
no,
they
I
give
have no
a
idea.
Wonderful yes. idea. And of course, I mean, high tech will do that as well, because
yes.
you'll have virtual tours, and I'm sure, and
all the
bells and whistles.
Yes. Even though people do come and see those models, when they actually go to the temples, they're still like awed by the.
Yes. Yes.
But there, how large the actual stones are,
absolutely.
You know. So, like, I mean,
but there you've got this sort of like an aerial view,
yes.
but it's very tactile as well. So,
yes.
I find that very very useful. I love the sleeping ladies' room as well, because it's really almost reminiscence of where she was found in the
yes.
dark underground. It's
yes.
it's very clever. I'd just like to remind listeners who might have only just joined us that this is The Artifact, and I'm Patricia Camilleri, and I'm talking to Sharon Sultana about the National Museum of Archaeology. Sharon, is there any work being currently carried out to enhance the museum display, though?
Yes, there is. Mm-hmm. Loads of it at the moment. Mm-hmm. We are working on the upper halls and the upper floor, where hopefully by mid next year we shall have the Bronze Age finishing Punic and Roman sections open to the public.
That's a big deal.
That's a very, very big deal. Because basically what we are doing now, some of these artifacts were already on display in the old display before the 97 museum opened. But basically what we wanted to do was make sure that the public sees artifacts which have never been on display, along with those which are important that have to be displayed. Quite a feat, because we have a lot of artifacts in the stores, thousands and thousands of them. They had, up till January of this year, they had never been inventoried, so we didn't even know what we had in the stores. They had never been catalogued or photographed or digitized or anything. So what we're doing now, with a team of people who had just graduated in archaeology and even professionals, we are building up our inventory system and tying that along with what we want on display for the Bronze Age, Phoenician, Punic and Roman periods. We are getting on quite well, because we are like doing an excavation within the museum. We are finding artifacts which were thought to be lost, and then some publications says this haven't been seen for a number of years, and we're finding these artifacts, and it's really exciting. For the upper floors, we have we are really working, as I said, with two graduate archaeologists who are doing this inventory system, along with people like Dr. Nicky Vella, who's helping us on the finishing, Professor Anthony Frendo, who's working on the inscriptions, Professor Anthony Bonanno, who's working on the Roman period, and even Dr. David Trump, who's working on the Bronze Age. So we're like having a team of people from different sections, you know, like you have professionals, graduates, people from the museum. And it's working out brilliantly because, like, they're giving us their expertise and we're working together and it's coming on really well.
Which rooms exactly will be you be using upstairs?
We'll be using what we call the Pretty Halls, but which are basically the upper floor, the right-hand wing. All of the right-hand wing will be open to the public.
So that means the salon?
Not the salon.
Not the salon.
On the right. As soon as you go up the stairs, on the right-hand side, there are three large rooms.
On the right-hand side. Yes. And what about the design angle?
We shall be having a graphic designer on board as well, because it obviously involves a lot of preparation. From the artifacts front, as I said, we're having this digitization process. Together with the professionals, we're choosing the artifacts which have to be displayed. As soon as all these artifacts are ready, they have to go for conservation, and that takes a lot of time. So we're having, as from next month, we'll be having the lab within the museum up and running so that we don't move the artifacts to and fro to Bigi. Because it's easier that way, because we have so many artifacts that it's easier. So their team are coming over to the National Museum of Archaeology, and they'll be working there again. We'll be having conservators, we'll be having students in conservation, and we'll be also having students who are actually reading archaeology now. Working together for conservation purposes, so give each other feedback on what we're doing. That's on the artifacts front. As far as the design and layout, we shall be having this graphic designer on board, who shall be together with the professionals and ourselves discussing how many artifacts we want displayed, and also didactic material, and also anything audiovisual and, you know, like high-tech equipment, which we would like to have installed in place.
You probably have a wish list, I imagine.
A long wish list. And I have... Just a few months ago, I went to Cologne to this exhibition where, like, they show you all this high-tech and PDAs for the hearing impaired, and it's all so very good to have, but these cost a lot of money, and we're like, but we're going to do a lot of things. We're going to have touch screens and want the display to be more interactive. We want children to understand. We want people who have no knowledge of archaeology to understand. And that's for the upper floors.
And going back to the artifacts just for a moment, what kind of, you say you've got a lot of artifacts, and I know that you have. What are the criteria that you use when you're choosing something, I don't know, for something for the Bronze Age display? What criteria do you really use to choose those pieces? It must be very difficult.
Yes, it is. What we do, we try as much as possible to tie the artifacts with the storyline, basically with the message you want to convey to the people. So, for example, if we want to speak about language, okay, you have to have the inscriptions showing the different inscriptions and the different languages. What we're going to do as well is we're not going to have clear-cut sections. So we're not going to have Phoenician and then Roman. If, for example, language is interlinked to both, we're going to have a section on language from the Phoenician, Roman.
It's going to be even themed rather
It's going to be themed. The Bronze Age will have to be kept separately because we want to delineate the difference between prehistoric and historic. So the Bronze Age will have to be, it will still be thematic, but it will be separated from the Phoenician. Then there are obviously artifacts which are so important that they have to be displayed. Like, for example, I don't know, the Chippewas, the sarcophagus, you know, those are artifacts which have to be displayed. But we're also trying to find artifacts which have never been displayed before, which are also very important. And, for example, for the Phoenician period, we are trying, together with Dr. Vella, to like gather as much information and doing a lot of research on tombs, for example. So we're trying to find the artifacts from a tomb and display the whole range of artifacts from that particular tomb. It takes a lot of time because, as I said before, all these were never inventoried. Throughout the years, some of the boxes have lost their labeling. So we have to, you know, like go through books and old photos of excavations mm-hmm. and try to match artifacts. And it takes a lot of time because mm-hmm. we're like 100 years backwards with regards to inventories and research.
Sometimes that can be a bit of an advantage because if you've got a lot of baggage to carry forward, sometimes it's difficult to change things. People don't like change. Whereas if you're starting something, I won't say ex novo, but something really quite innovative, then perhaps you've got a chance of doing things without having that baggage.
Yes, it's true. Uh-huh. It's true. And you're always trying to, for example, you're always trying to innovate and mm-hmm. to keep up to date with, I mean, technology and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. For example, we would, as I said before, we'd have to change the lower floors. And we would like, for example, instead of the Tarshin Hall stone blocks, we'd like to have a section showing people what archaeology is all about, because that is missing in the National Museum of Archaeology.
Yes.
So, like, people don't even understand stratigraphy. So, mm-hmm. you know, so we plan to have a section explaining all this and by this keeping up to date with mm-hmm. modern technologies as much as we can. Mm-hmm. However, on the other hand, it's a bit disappointing to go up in the stores and find some boxes with just question mark on them and not knowing from where they were excavated, no labels yes. whatsoever. It mm-hmm. takes a lot of time to do the research and hopefully find something, because you don't always find, because if the excavations are old and the photos are old, they're fading, and you know, so like
absolutely.
but we're getting there and we're getting good results.
Sometimes the photos can have a sort of a eureka effect, you know, when suddenly you see this object in this old yes. photograph. And I know that has happened recently, but of course it's very difficult. And this is one of the reasons why archaeologists always go on and on about provenance, the importance of provenance, because taking a piece of pottery out of a field and saying, oh, this is a piece of ancient pottery, once you've taken it out of its context, then it really becomes meaningless.
Exactly.
It's interesting just as a piece of ancient pottery, but it really becomes meaningless. And it's a pity that it should have happened even within the museum context.
Yeah.
But, of course, one can't really sort of blame previous generations.
Not at all.
That's not the point, because very often they were working under difficult conditions.
Yes.
I know that one of the difficulties, in fact, I wanted to ask you this question. I mean, the Auberge de Provence is a wonderful building in its own right. And, of course, it's prestigious. And one of the reasons why it ended up there is because mm-hmm. it's on the main road. I mean, semiotically, it's very significant. So, you know, it's nice to have the museum mm-hmm. there, as you said. But, of course, it does create its own
yes,
problems
restrictions.
As restrictions uh-huh, yes. as an old
fact,
building. Really.
Yes, in fact, I mean, obviously, as an auberge, we can't do any changes to the building itself. We can't, like, pull down walls and open
hardly.
Bigger holes. We can do nothing of the sort. So mm-hmm. that in itself is very, very restrictive.
Mm-hmm.
And when you consider the huge collection we have, it's even small as a building. I mean,
yes.
okay, right now it's just the ground floor, but mm-hmm. eventually we'll have the left wing open with the medieval and contemporary artifacts, and we'll have the Monetarium up and running with the numismatic collection. So eventually it's going to
be
like
small.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
become
mm-hmm.
small.
Mm-hmm. And that creates problems even when you're choosing the artifacts.
The artifacts,
because
yes.
you've got a space limitation,
yes.
space is at a premium.
Yes. Yes.
Regardless, yes, that's very interesting. Just to remind readers to remind listeners again that this is The Artifact, and I'm Patricia Camilleri, and I'm talking to Sharon Sultana about the National Museum of Archaeology. One of the sort of main functions of the museum is, in fact, children. I mean, children form quite a large group number of the people that actually visit the museum. What are you planning for them? How are you going to make it really, really significant for them? Because sometimes I think the children go on these visits. They might remember something, but it's usually something rather vague, and they need to be guided. And the national curriculum does state very clearly that children need to be taken on these sort of outreach kind of experiences. So what have you got planned?
Yes, what we are currently doing is before school groups used to just come in without booking and they used to be led by their teacher. I'm not saying that they wouldn't know what to tell them, because sometimes they used to write to us beforehand or, you know, and get some information. But now it's different. We're offering the service of giving guided tours to the children. We have a person who's very good at it. He loves doing it. And he can, like, talk to them in their language, you know, and they understand him perfectly well. He makes the tour really interesting. We also tell the teachers that if they want additional information, they can, I mean, nowadays with email, you can, like, send them texts and whatever. And he also, at the end of the tour, he takes out a tray from one of the showcases, you know, so, like, they see him open a showcase, the bottom part of the showcase, and take a tray with potsherds and flint and chert, and he lets them touch the artifacts. And the children are so fascinated by something like that. Mm-hmm. For present, that's what we are doing. I have loads of ideas.
Sure.
And we are currently working on them as Heritage Malta as a whole. Mm-hmm. In fact, just last Sunday, we had an open day at the Museum of Natural History in Mdina, and there was one of the people who works at Heritage Malta who did a pottery session with the children. She's a ceramist and she made a pottery and the children loved it. Oh, so she's taken all these pottery things back home with her to fire in her kiln, and they will be ready in 2 weeks' time for them to pick them up. We're trying as much as possible to do things like this, that the children understand how pots were made. Well, beforehand, the same tools, using their bare hands, sure, basically, and bone points and flint to make the designs and to make them understand that those were the only resources they had. They didn't have the wheel at that time, or they didn't have anything else.
Exactly. So, I remember doing credit on pottery with Professor Anthony Frendo on my course. And we must have been about 12 or 15 people perhaps at that time. And I think I was the only one who'd ever actually made a pot. And there's something so amazingly tactile and magical about creating a pot. When you, I did slab pots, but I also eventually did some work on the wheel. And that growth of the pottery under your hands, the shape, the fact that you can shape it yourself, it really gives you an idea of why they considered pottery to be sort of sometimes this sort of magical quality. Mm-hmm. Because it really was miraculous. It gave ancient man certainly an capabilities that he would never have had without it. Yes. And this idea of the children actually doing it themselves, knowing what goes into it.
Mm-hmm. They get to appreciate more. Because, for example, if you see the Sleeping Lady or the Venus, they are made of clay.
Absolutely.
So, like, and they're perfectly well made. Mm-hmm. People who have tried to replicate them haven't been so successful nowadays, you know. So when you think that they just had limited resources and limited tools and they managed to come up with something so fantastic.
Exactly. It's it is incredible. So when are we going to be able to come and visit these upper rooms in the National Museum of Archaeology?
Hopefully, if all goes well, because basically there are also some works to be done to the floor and other stuff like that. Basically, by mid-next year, they should be up and running. Good. Fingers crossed that nothing goes wrong, but they should be up and running.
Great. Well, we certainly...
And then we start working on the other...
Yes, that was
and
my
the
next
basement.
Question
yes.
was, and yes. what are the plans after the upper rooms?
We want the National Museum of Archaeology to be a whole experience. So we shall also be working on the later periods. And we shall also be working on the basement, because now having taken up the pretty halls for the Bronze Age, Phoenician, Punic and Roman, and the other halls for the later periods, we're going to be left with no space for the temporary exhibitions, except for the salon. Mm-hmm. So we'll be working on the basement. We want it to be like very nicely made up for temporary exhibitions. We plan to have a cafeteria in the basement. We want the basement to be up and running for a number of reasons. Melita Street, which is the entrance to the basement, will be open to the public as well, and it will be made accessible to persons with disability. Because as it is now, we cannot have a ramp in Republic Street for persons with wheelchairs or pushchairs to come up the stairs.
So that will give them access
from Melita Street.
That's great. Well, come to the end of today's programme. I'd like to thank Sharon Sultana for being with us and explaining something about the National Museum of Archaeology. We really enjoyed hearing you speak, and we really look forward to visiting these new rooms and to seeing how the National Museum of Archaeology develops in the future.
Thanks.
Until next time, this is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.